Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 67. It's Week 17 of the NFL season as the Steelers get ready to potentially end their season against the Cleveland Browns or, with a little help from the Buffalo Bills, get ready for the playoffs if they do beat the Browns and the Bills beat the Jets. Dave, well, it's a very sad day here at Eagles Depot as we may be moving on to Titans Depot or some shores not seen before, as Chip Kelly is no longer the coach of the Eagles, and I was wrong about all that.
Oh, you was wrong.
Wait, that's
is that what you're trying to say? Oh, okay, and I was, what's the opposite of you being wrong?
You were damn right.
Hey, it's good to have one of those darts hit every once in a while. I'm not surprised at all, and I guess I'm gonna go Gronk on you and kind of spike it right in your face here.
Yeah, because I was
oh, you was wrong.
Okay. I'll tell you, all I know is last night I saw something on Twitter around 7:30, and then the last 15 hours have been a bit of a blur.
Yeah, you know, and you know, a lot of my reasoning behind that, I think I kind of made that clear even starting back to prior to the start of the 2015 season, was you could really tell that Chip had pushed all of his chips, if you will,
sure,
to the middle of the table with those off season moves, with, you know, the trading, with you know, letting some of those veterans just go and going out there and signing multiple running backs. I mean, I'm still a firm believer that his whole goal during that offseason leading up to the draft was to get Marcus Mariota. Nobody's going to be able to convince me other than that, because, I mean, Sam Bradford was almost like a consolation prize. I think all that deal was made to try to eventually get Sam Bradford over to Tennessee for that draft pick for Mariota. But anyway, regardless of that, you could just see that. I mean, all the chips, in my opinion, were all pushed to the middle of the table. And when, you know, when he, you know, let's face it, the Eagles laid some eggs at points during this season. And when they were on the outside looking in, sure, they still had a chance to potentially make the playoffs last week. But when that didn't happen,
I'll just tell you why I'm surprised is. I'm surprised. Look, obviously, I'm a big fan of what Chip Kelly was trying to do, and it didn't work. And so, you know, I was wrong about it, and he was wrong about it. I'm surprised because Jeffrey Lurie's a business guy, and he made a decision, you know, basically 10 months ago to put all his chips behind Chip Kelly, and a guy who'd gone 10-6 in two seasons in the NFL, which is damn respectable. And so he gave him all the player personnel, you know, and all the other power that you get in an organization, more maybe as much as any coach other than Bill Belichick has. And then to reverse course in 10 months tells me one of two things. Obviously, look, I've always said I'm a big fan of stability in any organization. If you made the wrong decision, then you fix it. If you don't have the right guy, you fire the guy. And that's what I said about Chudzinski in Baltimore. Look, it's 1 year. Do you give a guy multiple years? You do if you still think you have the right guy. But if you know you don't have the right guy, move on. So I'm very surprised that after 2 years in bed with the guy, that he gave him all the power and then, you know, he ceded him everything and then he pulled it 10 months later. So I'm still going to make the assumption that Jeffrey Lurie is a smart guy. And so I'm going to assume that he saw something in Chip Kelly in these 10 months that he hadn't seen in the previous 2 years. But if he fired him because of the team's record, I'll just continue to say the same thing. That's a terrible decision. If he fired him because he saw a lot more about what he is as a manager and a organizational head, a CEO type, that's fine. So that's my take on it.
I don't think – I mean, look, I'm not going to say that Chip Kelly's not a brilliant offensive mind. You know, I think he's very innovative. Now, I'm not sure he had the personnel that he needed to get done what he needed to get done, especially this season. And on top of that, I just don't think he's a good people person, and I don't think he's a good personnel evaluator outside of college. I mean, look, if you get athletes in college at a prime program, you can win.
Yep.
But in the NFL, you really got to have a keen eye because everybody's talented.
Sure.
In the NFL. So I think what ended up getting him fired was not the fact that he's not a bright offensive mind. I think it's his talent evaluation along with his inability to deal with players. He's not a players coach.
I think that has to be the answer. I think you're right. Now, the question is two things. One is, is one season enough to judge that? I mean, obviously, Bill Belichick got fired in Cleveland. So, I mean, you can fail and you can be successful. Pete Carroll failed with the Jets and went on to be successful. We'll see. Do you think Chip Kelly is coaching, head coaching somewhere, college or the NFL next year?
If he is, I think it's college. I think he's done it in the NFL, to be quite honest with you, David.
I don't know if he'll have a head coaching job next year. I don't think he's done in the NFL. Obviously, look, I mean, this was not his, you know, people were talking all the time about him wanting to go back to college. When you get all the power, you're not going to walk away from the job. So that's the one thing is I just didn't think he would get fired. So that's what surprised me. So I'll be interested to see where it goes. I probably agree with you that if he does go back to college, he'll never be back in the NFL. But if the Tennessee job opens and Mariota's there, if you're the owner of the Titans, do you at least interview Chip Kelly?
Well, I mean, remember, there could be some ownership changes there. They could dump a lot of things in Tennessee this offseason. Ownership changes, front office changes, all that. Do you really want to start off your new regime with a guy that's going to be a media, what's the word I'm looking for, hot spot? I mean,
well, whoever you hire is going to, you know, see, you're an NFL coach.
You're asking for it if Chip's there. You know, I think
so. You don't think having Mariota there and anything like that? Yeah, I mean, that's not a draw for you.
No. I mean, you can make the obvious connections, right? I mean, that you know, that would be ideal for him. I just don't think it. I don't think here's what's going to happen too. I think, David, over the next couple of weeks, you're going to start having all these players that play for Chip Kelly start coming out. With,
by the way,
Aaron,
did you know that
Aaron the Dirty Laundry?
What was your take on? And I only got to this story yesterday. As we, you know, continue with Eagles, our last edition of EaglesDepot.com, the terrible Eagles podcast. What did you see that Jason Peters pulled himself out of the game? Jason Peters?
Yes, I did.
In the fourth quarter. What do you make of the fact that your team's getting smoked, you're not going to make the playoffs, and your Pro Bowl caliber left tackle ass out of the game?
Yeah, I mean, that speaks volumes.
Well,
as a player?
Chip Kelly thing. What do you take of that for the player?
I think, A, it's disgusting on the part of Jason Peters, and B, I think it says a lot about what maybe some players think about Chip Kelly.
I mean,
I think that's twofold.
That story is a damning story in a lot of ways, and I don't know if that played any part in him getting canned or not or whatever, but just in terms of a football story, that one got glossed over in the national media. I only just read it. I never heard anybody talk about it, but that to me was a shocking revelation that a guy, you know, starter pulls himself out of a game because he didn't want to get hurt in week 15 because they can't make the playoffs. That's crazy stuff. All right, let's get to our job, and that's talking about the Steelers. And Dave, somebody asked me to put a percentage on the Steelers making the playoffs, and our scenarios are down to a very simple scenario. As I said on the open, the Steelers win and the Jets lose at Buffalo. The Jets have lost six straight to Buffalo. I put it at 30%, over or under?
Barely under. I'll go if this is the price is right, all I have to do is declare under, but I will choose 29%.
All right.
Here's the good thing if you're a Steelers fan. One would think that they're going to be able to beat the Browns on Sunday. Of course, that's probably quite a stretch now, based on what happened Sunday. We all thought the same thing against the Ravens, but let me put it this
way. By the way, Johnny Manziel being evaluated for concussion symptoms, and that means Austin Davis going with the ones today. Terrell Pryor is taking reps at quarterback, so it's craziness in Cleveland.
Yeah. So let me rephrase that. I like the Steelers' chances, of winning against the Browns. Now, on the flip side, this is Rex Ryan's Super Bowl against the Jets, right?
Yep.
Mike Tomlin said on Tuesday that he's not going to be calling Rex Ryan, and Rex Ryan doesn't need Mike Tomlin to call him, doesn't need any extra motivation, because this is the same Jets team that fired Rex Ryan at the end of last season. So, and Rex has all, now granted, the roster has changed quite a bit for the Bills. This is the same Rex Ryan who beat the Jets several weeks ago. So, the motivation's there. Rex Ryan, I think is a motivator of sorts and can probably get his team up for this game. I'm just not convinced that they have the personnel to pull it off. Especially, on the road, even though it is in the state of New York there. But I don't, that's where the decrease in my probability is I'm more worried about Buffalo being able to beat the Jets than I am about the Steelers beating the Browns. So
well, that makes sense.
You just got to go out there and concern yourself with what you do on Sunday if you're the Steelers and just hope things fall the right way, but it goes without saying that the Steelers got themselves in this mess, and if they don't make the playoffs, they have nobody to blame but themselves.
With a little bit more of a more expansive Mike Tomlin on Tuesday than normal. I don't know if that's a result of the loss or just was the day of the week. You got asked a lot of questions. Was there anything that jumped out to you about his commentary, either recapping the game or in the Q&A?
I think the biggest thing, and I wrote about this a little bit this morning, was him not totally discounting the fact. So I think the question that you asked him about the rhythm of the offense, or the rhythm with Roethlisberger being thrown out of sync because of them running so much, to start off the game. And what, Roethlisberger threw two passes, I think, in the opening quarter. I think he threw a total of, what, five or seven?
He threw one on the opening drive to Jesse James, and then he threw the obviously the one that was overturned to AB and the incompletion to Marcus Wheaton. And that was the first two drives.
And I think he threw only seven with, by the time there was 5 minutes or so left in the first half. So... And look, and there's reports today that Roethlisberger left the Steelers facility today, meaning Wednesday morning, with an illness of sorts. Now, Roethlisberger certainly looked off. Now, we don't know, and I don't think he's come out and said that he was sick.
I didn't hear it once. I mean, I heard somebody ask a question on Twitter and did not hear one time anybody suggest that was the case, so.
Now, is that a possibility? I suppose. Will we ever really know for sure? Probably not. But unless Roethlisberger just comes out and says I was under the weather that day, he in his interview on his weekly radio show on Tuesday, he did say that things were out of sync and offense didn't have the rhythm, and he also admitted that he didn't play well. He also, I wouldn't say threw Martavis Bryant completely under the bus.
Pretty close.
He says,
well, I mean, I don't know. Look, we should discriminate or differentiate between what's telling the truth and what's making an assumption. I think he told the truth.
Yeah, I mean that's Roethlisberger's words exactly were that's a play that we expect Martavis to make.
And that's exactly what we said on Monday.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we said on Monday. Now we have a listener out there, at least one. Well, hopefully we have more listeners. We have one listener that really doesn't think by his tone on Twitter that we have not been hard enough on Roethlisberger not only for this game Sunday, but Roethlisberger's career, if I'm reading the narrative correctly.
Well, I don't know that you can be any harder than we were on Monday than saying this is point one, two, and three squarely is on Ben. Everybody was – look, it's a team loss in the sense that the offense was underperformed, the defense underperformed, they got outcoached, but start front and center with Ben – I mean, I don't know what more you want us to say.
I don't know either. I mean, look, I mean, it was an awful game. awful. I mean, you can't turn the football over two times, not get it back on. Now, on the flip side, I think he took issue with us kind of ripping up the defense in the second half of that show. But it was my opinion that even though we said that the defense, of course, played a part in that loss, most of our tearing apart the defense was looking forward to 2016, was it not?
Yeah, well, and that's what – look, here's the thing is we can all say that the defense gave up 20 points, and we did say, you know, when they give up 20 points, the Steelers should win. That doesn't mean they played well. I mean, the first two drives of the game, look, they happened at the beginning. If they happened at the end of the game, we'd say that's the whole reason the Steelers lost. It still counts. First two drives of the game, and I'll put that as much on coaching and scheming as much as the players, but the first two drives of the game were a joke. The Ravens ran 26 plays. They held the ball for however long they held it, 11 or 12 minutes, and they converted 5 or 6 third downs. I mean, it was awful against a quarterback who'd been there for half a second. As I said to Mike, how much of the playbook does this guy know in 12 days? I wanted him to say we should have been more, he's not going to say it, but should have been more aggressive and should have played, tighter coverage and said the one thing he could do is he can throw deep. If he beats us deep to open the game, God bless him.
Yeah, I would have sent numbers after him. I want to see how he handles numbers.
Yeah, blitz like crazy and play press coverage. See what he does.
If he hits you for 89 yards over the top of Antoine Blake, all right, so be it.
So be it, right. We sent 6. We played press coverage. He had a second and a half to get it out. They had to make more than one read. Good luck.
And Tomlin also said that the four-man rush was not up to snuff. Well, you can go back through several games this season where the four-man rush was not up to snuff. And if that's not bad enough, we've seen probably, I don't have the totals in front of me, probably a total of 40 times this season, them actually only send 3. Now, I understand sending 3 in situations like, 3rd and 19, situations like that.
Yeah.
But we'll have to go back and look at down and distances and time of game and everything involved when it was. I know a few of those were red zone type opportunities. But, if there's any time you don't want a quarterback to have time against this defense, it's within your own 20, in my opinion. I understand why they do it and why they try to disguise it and drop in who they do. But if you're 3, if you're rushing 3, you better have created some sort of numbers mismatch in doing so to allow you to have a 1, and that's why you do it mostly, I think, is because you think you can get some sort of one-on-one matchup, and you're expecting your guy to win those one-on-one battles, and we just haven't, outside of maybe Tuitt and Cameron Hayward at points during this season, we haven't seen that. We spent like Bob Pine on Twitter says, we spent a lot of that last podcast not only putting blame on Ben Roethlisberger for that game, but talking about the defense and look, I'll go back to just what I've said all season and we talked about heading into the season, we worried about this defense and it's been that way. It's not magically going to get better with the personnel that they have out there. And even if this team somehow makes it to the playoffs, the only way they're going to go far and to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl is if the offense is just racking up the scoreboard, because the defense
And they have been. And that's the whole reason people had the conversation.
Right. I mean, we talked about the high power offense and potential all off season and what's healthy and for good portions of it was 6 straight games they put up 30 or more points. That's what needed to happen this year in order for the Steelers to win games, and it did not happen on Sunday against the Ravens, and you end up with a loss. So I don't know what Bob Pine wants us to do. We only have an hour show, and we got to dedicate 15 minutes to it to Eagles Depot. you know, we spent another 15 minutes in that last show talking about Roethlisberger and putting most of the blame on him. No, we have not absolved the Steelers coaching staff. No, we've taken our shots at the defense, and we've taken the shots at defense all season as well. It was a bad loss. It's one that shouldn't happen. Tomlin gets everybody wears it. Like Tomlin said on Tuesday, they now have to work of getting the stench off of them, and it's quite the stench right now.
Yeah, it is, and it's you know, it's gonna last into the off season if you know, even if they win, and obviously if the Jets win as well.
Everybody will look at this as the Steelers didn't deserve to be in the playoffs if they get into the playoffs. And then
there's no such thing. If you get in the playoffs, you deserve to be there. You play the schedule that's presented in front of you, and if you go 10-6 and you get in, and look, I thought 10-6 was a lock. It's not a lock. You know, the Kansas City did a great job. They've won 9 games in a row. They got themselves in. The Jets, we knew the schedule was soft the second half of the season, and they've done a great job down the stretch. They're both playing really good football. You know, you're going to have 4 division winners, so it's pretty straightforward. We knew from the get-go, I mean, really, we knew 6 weeks in who the division winners are, and you know, maybe Kansas City changes it for the three that we had guaranteed, but, you know, it's not because the Broncos have failed. They did what they needed to do on Monday night, so pretty straightforward stuff. And if you don't get in with 10 wins, is it a disappointing season? Yeah. Is it a failed season? I don't know. I mean, you know.
Well, in the eyes of most fans, it is.
I'm sure it is. In the eyes of Mike Tomlin and the players too.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this. I mean, let's face it. This is a jaded fan base, right?
It's a fan base with high expectations.
Right, right. I mean, every year they expect to win the Super Bowl, and with good reason, because that's the precedent. That's what this organization is built on. But the reality of the matter is you're not going to win a Super Bowl every year. Now, people will come back and say, well, the Steelers haven't won a playoff game since, you know.
And we know. And we know.
And that's quite – that's quite a strong narrative, and a battle, and something that Mike Tomlin will wear from, you know,
until he wins the next one.
Right. If they don't make even if they make the playoffs this year, that's not enough. Even winning one playoff game,
I think it'd be worse. It would be worse for Mike Tomlin, I think, if they make the playoffs and don't win a playoff game.
Yeah, especially considering who they're likely to face, which right now, if they would make it in as a 6th seed,
down the gun, right?
Well, I mean, you're going to either face the Bengals, Denver, or Kansas City in the first round of playoffs.
Yeah,
that cut and dry.
Yeah, it looks like the Bengals, right?
Could be. Yeah, I mean, as long as Denver doesn't, as long as Denver wins.
Yep.
It's basically that. So the narrative is strong. It is deserving. On the flip side, the Steelers draft picks that they have invested in the defense specifically over the last 3-4 seasons have not played up to
– Ryan Shazier may be an impact player. Stephon Tuitt may be an impact player. But, you know, since Cam Hayward, they haven't had a guy come in the defense and make a difference.
And so where does some of the blame have to fall then?
Well, right.
I'm not a fire Kevin Colbert guy either, because you have to identify the hits along with the misses and all too. But it's very, very hard on an organization when you miss on first and second round draft picks. It's very hard. The picks after first and second round, you know, flip the coins a lot of times, and you can look across the NFL. But when you don't hit, especially, you can win in the NFL with a great offense, but at some point during the regular season and specifically during the playoffs, you're going to need your defense to help win you some games. And right now, not only this year, but in seasons past, the Steelers don't have that kind of defense that can win games for you when your offense sputters.
Well, you played right into it for me. Let me tell you the stat that I was talking about on my show yesterday. I'm going to read to you teams 20 through 32 in yards allowed defensively. Very basic stat, not always the most telling stat in a game, but over the course of the season, a very telling stat. 20, Buffalo, 21, St. Louis, 22, Oakland, 23, Pittsburgh. There you go. Washington, Jacksonville, Cleveland, Miami, Indianapolis, San Francisco, Philadelphia, New Orleans, the New York Giants. There's one playoff team there, and it's Washington, and they're there because they're 8-7 in a division where 8-7 gets you in the playoffs. Let me read you the top 10. Denver, Seattle, Houston, Carolina, Arizona, the Jets, New England, Kansas City, Tampa, and Baltimore. First eight are getting in the playoffs if the Jets win. And, you know, it's just all you need to know. The more I thought about our conversation on Monday, Dave, that you started us on, the more intrigued I am by it about this defense. Do you blow this – wow, sorry. Do you blow this thing up? I mean, the only guys that you're going to keep, you know, that you really want to have around next year, you're going to have Hayward and you're going to have Tuitt. Definitely you want those guys. On any defense, you want those guys. You're going to have Mike Mitchell. You're going to have Ryan Shazier. And you're going to have Bud Dupree. I don't know that there's another guy that I would make a case for. Look, you have to have players. So, you know, there may be other guys involved. But, you know, you're not going to bang the drum for anybody else. You maybe sign William Gay. That gives you six guys.
Re-sign McClendon for base.
Yeah, that gives you seven guys. But, I mean, look, the outside linebackers are, you know, we crushed those guys last week on Monday. I mean, there's nobody there you're banging the drum for. You need guys, so some of them may be back. I mean, I like Moats at you know, the vet minimum as a 10-snap a guy, or somebody gets injured, you know, replace him for 2 weeks. I do like Vince Williams. He'll be back. Sean Spence is gone. I really, you know, I'm completely up in the air on Lawrence Timmons. And, you know, the safeties, sure, bring Golden back at the, you know, whatever minimum you can bring him back at, be a special teams guy and an extra safety. But the idea that the Steelers didn't draft corners, we need to stop with that because they did draft two last year. Now, we don't know if they're any good because we never saw Sanquest Golson, and Doran Grant hasn't played it down. So I
one down.
Did he play it down?
He played one.
Did he? Oh, I didn't know that.
This past weekend.
Yeah, so, you know, the jury's out on that. But they did draft two corners in the first four rounds. So people keep writing, it gets tiresome. Some of this conversation gets tiresome. They ignore the corner position. Well, they didn't last year. Look, it wasn't the first round, but it was the second and the fourth round. So they did it. It didn't help them at all, but they did it. So at least keep that part in mind.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They did address the defensive side of football. They just haven't, you know, found the right players yet that can contribute fast enough or to the level that they expected, you know, they would. And Cinquez Golson, look, they obviously didn't know that he was going to have a shoulder issue. At least we don't think. I mean, he was a healthy kid in college there. We don't know what he is, but would Cinquez Golson being on the field this year changed much?
Probably not, but I'll tell you what. I mean, can you imagine if he was William Gay caliber on the other side instead of Antoine Blake? I mean, changes something. I mean, is it a difference between one win and one loss? Maybe.
Well,
maybe not.
He was still going to make mistakes, though, right?
Of course. Look, I'm not. They didn't draft Charles Woodson in his prime. I mean, you know, they drafted a rookie corner who you put out there. So, you know,
let's not forget he was undersized, and it's still yet to be seen, probably still best suited to play in the slot. So we would still be having the same conversations, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying the season's different if Sanquez Golson was healthy.
Okay, and the same goes with Doran Grant. I mean,
well, he was healthy. He hadn't made it on the field.
Right. So, I mean, if they don't see him having that ability to do that just yet, well, that in my opinion, is on Doran Grant. Now, what else? You know, I still contend that the problem with his defense isn't the inside linebackers, although, you know, neither one of them definitely
deserve. And I agree with you. It's not the problem with the defense. They just haven't been as good as we hoped.
Right. Now, and what does that leave you? I mean, Mike Mitchell's had a good season. The other safety positions had its question marks throughout the season with missed tackles. But, I mean, you're
pretty
much...
Are you giving Mitchell a good season? Are you going to give him...
Not a great season. Yeah. Damn, it was better than...
He's had an average NFL season, right? Is that where you put him?
People want to say he was snubbed for the Pro Bowl. I'm not going to go there.
Stop. Yeah.
I'm not going to go there. It was what they thought. What they signed, right.
Okay. I'll give you that. He's missed some tackles. He's a hitter. He's made some plays. He's been late at times. I think he's been Ryan Clark in the end of Ryan Clark's career.
And I think William Gay's been fantastic. Pro Bowl worthy? No. Solid? Yes. Rock solid, as Mike Tomlin says. I would agree with that. So that leaves you with your two other cornerback positions, being as how you play so much nickel. And then we can get into the argument, would Boykin have even made a difference in the slot in all those games, because you still would have had to play Cockrell or Blake on the outside?
I think Cockrell's been okay. I mean,
I'd like to see him be more physical, and he's going to have tackling issues. I mean, I think that was kind of the knock on him was, A, he's a zone corner mostly, and, just really not as physical as you would like, especially when it comes to what the Steelers described the job position to be, a cornerback in a 3-4 system. So pretty much, I guess what I'm saying is, I'm more disappointed about the outside. I keep going back to the outside line.
Yeah, they've been all. Look, it's right because of expectations. The guys in the secondary aren't pedigree guys, and they're not good. I mean,
while I'm thinking about it, I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but I made a comment on Twitter last night. Boy, Bryant McFadden sure doesn't look like an awful cornerback now, does he?
Oh, a lot of guys. Bryce McCain, start picking guys.
Ike Taylor, I mean, and remember, the Steelers won with those guys. So how did they people are going to say, well, you had Troy Polamalu back there freelancing and Ryan Clark. Yes, they had a good tandem of safeties on top of what would be considered average cornerbacks for that time. And let's not forget that William Gay was the whipping boy during those years as well, too. People couldn't wait to get him off of the team. So what I'm trying to say is, the Steelers, you go back and you look, and we reviewed those sacks from the outside linebackers several years ago. And look, the game's changed too, right? The quarterback's getting the ball out quicker. So is there a scheme? Is it scheme related? Probably some. Are the Steelers going to have to start drafting press, more
guys
press?
Guys to play man, press. Yep. I mean,
right. And mix that in.
Does Mike Tomlin take a hard look at his defensive assistants? I don't think Keith Butler's gone. He's been here 1 year. He's been here a bunch of years. I'm not putting this all on Keith. Look, I put some of it on Keith Butler, and when it was going well, I gave credit to Keith Butler. So when it goes poorly, obviously Keith's got to take some of the blame. And I give him more blame in the Baltimore game than any game this season. I still just don't understand how the Steelers didn't come out in a more aggressive defensive posture against Ryan Mallett in those opening two drives. So that's, to me, squarely on Keith Butler. But, okay, so that's where we are. Look, there are long-term relationships with guys on this staff. John Mitchell, the defensive line, Carnell Lake in the secondary, obviously Joey and Jerry at the linebacker position. They're newer guys. Are they all back?
You could make the best case for Carnell not being back of the group.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if like I say, I'm a big fan of continuity and stability.
As far as Joey Porter goes, and really you can make the same argument for Carnell Lake.
Yeah, there's no talent. You
can't make chicken salad out of chicken.
right. And so, what we don't know, and this is something that nobody who's not there on a daily basis is privileged. It's just inside info is, how well do they teach? How well do they coach guys up? I mean, maybe Carnell likes to coach these guys up like crazy. and they're playing to the peak of their capability. Maybe not. The outside guys, you know, Joey's not going to get canned. It's his first year. He's finding his way. We know what you have there. You have James Harrison. You know, you're not coaching James Harrison. You're trying to coach the other three guys, and Arthur Motes is a guy. So, I look at the coaching staff and say I would be not at all surprised if the coaching staff is exactly the same next year. Now, if this goes on a little bit further, then I think you got to – and I was talking about this on the show yesterday, and I mentioned it before. Blowing up the defense is absolutely an option. That doesn't necessarily mean – it doesn't mean changing scheme. But I think you have to look at, you know, just what you said. You know, look at what the edge rushers have done since 2011 and say we're just not there. And we keep going out and doing the same thing. And we're just not there. So what do we have to do differently?
And there's only two ways you can address that, and that's through the draft or through free agency. And we know this team has a lot of players that they, A, have their own that they want to keep that they're going to have to re-sign during the offseason. So that's already enough of a... Being as how they suck at evaluating cornerbacks, are you going to go out and get a big name cornerback and pay him the money? You know, now obviously they're not going to give up on Cortez until after training camp.
Yeah, I mean, so I heard somebody say, I think it was Ed Bouchette say, you know, they're going to cut Cortez. Why would you cut him before September 1st? I mean. You know, he's going to get the money he's going to get, so bring him and let him compete. And if it's a disaster again, you cut him. But, you know, why cut him now? It doesn't serve you.
No, I mean, you'll get some gratification salary cap-wise, but why not just give him a chance to compete, one more summer? And then, look, I mean, you're going to pay the Piper salary cap-wise either way. Either you're going to eat the elephant this year or you're going to have it split into two parts in 2016 and 2017. And being as how you lack numbers, you know, you need to carry him through training camp at the very least. Now, does he make it past then? We'll see. But I think it'd be foolish to cut him before then. But look, there's no reason to believe he's the long-term answer. They thought he was. I mean, they wouldn't have given him the big contract. But, you know, in addition to that, even re-signing Brandon Boykin at this point, if they were able to do that, which we both agree is not likely to happen, and why would Boykin do it anyway? But even if they did, that's not the complete fix that they need. So one would think that, you know, if they're going to approach any position during the offseason in free agency, you would think that it would be cornerback or it would be outside linebacker. And if it is outside linebacker, then what the hell is Jarvis Jones? What good is he? I mean, he's going to then be a former first-round draft pick that plays in a reserve role for you that rotates with Bud Dupree and whoever that high-profile free agent is. But even on the flip side, regardless of that, they're going to address the position in the draft. They absolutely have to.
They have to get this feels like rewind, man, deja vu.
Sounds like an off-season podcast right now, doesn't it?
Right. Well, I mean, it's the same one we had last year. I think they have to find a guy, either a corner, a safety, or an edge rusher in free agency. Because they have too many needs to address, again, on this defense, to do it all through the draft. I mean,
keep your fingers
crossed on Sunquest Golson, because if he can come in and start and you re-sign Gay and you have Mitchell, well, then, you know, then maybe the edge rushers, they don't have anything.
And here's a thought too. And they don't normally trade up in the first. The bad thing about being average team in the NFL right now is if you're picking outside of that top 20 or in right at 20 or right around in there, those premier Khalil Macks, you know, are off the board. So
you're going to have to find a guy. I mean, and look, you can find guys, plenty of guys in the second, third round are good players, and plenty of guys in the back of the first round, but you're not going to get the guy who is the quote unquote can't miss guy.
And if he is, he's probably going to be gone in the first five picks.
Right. So you're not getting him. Yeah, you're not getting him.
But, I mean, it wouldn't hurt my feelings to see them if they had the guy that they thought could be the guy that most of us think could be the guy to go up a few spots and get him if the opportunity. Here's one thing. Boy, this didn't go as we expected this podcast to go today. But, you know, here's another thing for you. Why in the hell did they draft Sammy Coates in the third round last year?
Well, I think that was protection when Marcus Wheaton leaves next year.
Well, we kind of well, not next year, but the year after.
But, after 16. And that's what it is. And that's fine. But
after 17.
After – is it 17 or is it 16?
He was drafted last year, 14.
No. Wheaton was drafted 2 15, years – 15, 16. Wheaton was drafted 2 years ago.
No, his last year was his rookie season.
Wheaton? No.
No. You said Bryant, didn't you? Martavis
no,
Bryant?
I said Wheaton, Marcus Wheaton.
Okay, well, okay, big deal. I mean, Marcus Wheaton.
You still need a third receiver. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, you have good luck drafting them late anyway, you know. And you know, you're expecting Martavis probably, once Wheaton leaves, to be the number two to Antonio Brown. So why not have taken one later than they took Sammy Coates?
Well, I don't have any problem with Sammy Coates' pick. You know, look, he's going to be your fourth guy next year. If somebody gets hurt, he's your three guy, and then Wheaton's gone, and he's got to, you know, you play a lot of three wides, and take a year to learn the system because he's a raw receiver. You know, I get no problem with that pick. My question is, this year, once you take an offensive lineman, are you taking anybody on the offensive side of the ball?
And is there even a reason outside of a guard late in the first round to take an offensive lineman?
Let's say you take an offensive lineman in the first three rounds. But, I mean, is there a reason to go offense anywhere else? I mean,
no.
You took
Absolutely
Jesse James.
Not.
He showed enough to at least – if you can coax another year out of Heath and you got Spaeth back, the tight end's okay. Your running back situation's great with Bell and Williams, and you got tons of receivers. So you take an offensive lineman somewhere in the first three rounds. I mean, I can't see taking another offensive player in the draft.
No, there's no reason to, especially when he's not going to make your roster. And especially if they re-sign – look, if they re-sign Ramon Foster, is there even a need to take a guard this year when you think that –
That's a good point too. I think – so maybe that moves it back from the first three to the fifth or the sixth.
And for those wanting a left guard in the first round or left tackle in the first round, the Steelers can win with Alejandro Villanueva. It might not be pretty at times, but they can win with Alejandro Villanueva.
Yeah, it's good enough. It's good enough for sure. Beecham should go to Miami and, you know, go down there. They got a it'd be a free shot for him. Give him a two year $12 million deal. He can rebuild his value.
So linebackers, cornerbacks, and safeties.
And a defensive end. I'd like another guy in the rotation.
Yeah, that wouldn't hurt either. I would be on board with that. I'm sure 80% of our listeners would probably be on board with that as well too. I mean, it really needs
100% of our listeners.
And you need to draft guys, and you need to take the risk of getting them on the field as early as possible.
Yeah, they do. I mean, look, a lot of things are going to be not solved, helped, if Sanquez Golson can play next year. I mean, hopefully he learned something this year. I mean, you know, obviously he didn't get to do the reps or anything, but I assume he's been sitting there, you know, watching film every day, understanding stuff, working on technique and, you know, working out, getting that shoulder healthy. So if he can step in and be a guy, well, that's going to – and I don't know how much the Steelers know about what he can do, because of the restrictions that he has, being on the IR, not being able to practice. So I don't know what they've learned about him, but they obviously thought enough of him. If he can step in and be a guy, well, then, okay, if you re-sign William Gay, then you've got three of your five defensive backfield positions set. Shazier is going to be one of your guys. Bud Dupree, I guess, is going to be one of your guys. And you've got – then you make your decision on Timmons, how you're going to handle that. And you go forward. But, I mean, when I talk about blowing things up, I think it is really around the Lawrence Timmons thing, because the number is big. And,
They don't. But I'm gonna tell you what's gonna happen there, and it's just what I said on that last fight. It's gonna be the only way Timmons stays if it's a Heath Miller / Troy Polamalu contract with no new money. You can keep the player, run the wheels off of him, at a much lower cap charge in 2016.
Would you do that, or would you roll with Vince Williams?
No, I'd keep Timmons and because look, Vince is still going to hurt you in coverage.
Yeah, well,
both can play the run.
What'd you think of Mike's answer to the last question I asked him about Ryan Shazier?
Yeah, that's just that's blowing smoke. I mean, we didn't expect him to say Ryan Shazier sucked this year.
So it was interesting though. He didn't give him a. I said, but for those who didn't hear, the question was kind of, you know, Ryan Shazier, essentially, what's your opinion of Ryan Shazier's football IQ?
Trajectory going up.
And he said he is a very smart guy, but he's young. And that meant that there's – and then the follow-up was, has he inhibited you somewhat in what you want to do in pass coverage? And he gave an emphatic no.
Let me ask you this. Do you really think, and this is not, if Ryan listens to this, I apologize. Do you view Ryan as a smart X's and O's player?
Because of the difficulties they've had in pass coverage, I'm obviously the reason I asked the question is I'm leaning no. Now, 2 years, missed a lot of time because of injury. There's lots of excuses to make for the guy. They drafted him for his athleticism. I have not, I've never spoken to him in my life, so I don't have any kind of personal view as to whether he's a smart guy or not a smart guy. They've had a lot of blown coverages from the linebackers, and oftentimes I don't think that's, when I say blown coverages, not getting beat. Not when I say blown coverages, it's not doing the right thing. So I don't, you know, that's why I asked the question.
I view him as not being as smart as Mike Tomlin probably makes him out to be. There's been some bad feels this year. He really has to get his head buried in this thing and his athletic ability. Look, I mean, he had a great game against San Francisco 49ers. I mean, we saw all aspects of his game.
That's as good as a guy can play in the NFL.
Fighting off blocks, reads, it all. So it's not like we haven't seen him play at the level the Steelers expected him to play. So to call him a bust right now, no. A, we would like to see him on the field more. B, we would like to see more of that San Francisco 49. Now, he doesn't have to register 15 tackles in a game to have a great game. But we want to see more of the things that we saw in that game against the 49ers. However, that's the only game right now that we can really circle for him, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's had moments. I mean, in every game he has moments, but in every game he seems to have some of the other moments as well. I mean, go back to the fullback beating him in the flat and then getting by him. That's on him. You go back to the Raiders game with Amari Cooper standing in the corner of the end zone wide open. I don't know exactly who it was on, but he's involved in that. And I can pick one from every game. So,
and as far as Vince Williams' future goes, I mean, he had all the opportunity in the world to make him the guy, although you'll probably best suited, obviously, to play the strong spot where Timmons plays. Maybe that's the problem there is they don't have, you know, a good backup, Mac, position guy, with Spence and Garvin behind Shazier, and Shazier didn't miss a lot. How detrimental was Shazier's or Spence's play to the defense throughout the season is one thing that we can kind of point to when we go back over the tape once the season ends. Like I said, not the best inside linebacker duo in the league, but I'm not ready to just scrap it either. I don't think it's the bulk of what the problem is. I think the bulk of what the problem is the outside linebacker, the pass rush, and the play of the cornerbacks on the outside.
I totally agree, and the upside is still there for Shazier. I'm not writing any of it off because we saw it, and that's the difference. And that, when we point to the guys, you say, playmakers, who can do it? At least we have seen it from Shazier. We've never seen it from Jarvis. We've yet to see it from Bud Dupree. We saw it from Shazier. So he has it. So at least you know he has it, And so you can, that's something to at least, you know, hope on, dream on, whatever. The other guys, we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it from any of those edge guys. They're not a playmaker in the group. And I, like as we've said, not going to write Dupree off at this point, but it's about time to write Jarvis off. You know, 3 years in, we haven't seen him take over a game. We haven't seen him take over a quarter. We haven't seen him take over a drive and make a play, knock the pass down in the game against the Ravens. Good play. You know, he'll get the occasional sack or, you know, the tackle for loss. But it just doesn't happen often enough for a guy that you're going to pay. You know, we're talking serious money here. If you're going to pick up his option and pay him $8 million, you have to be more impactful for that. Look, I wasn't a huge Jason Worlds fan, but Jason Worlds was more impactful than Jarvis Jones. And, you know, this is what we're talking about money-wise. The same type of stuff.
Right, and I was not a huge Jason Worlds fan either, but he did at least give you some more pressures. Look, I tore his sacks apart. His sacks had holes in
right.
them. But that's not but his, at that's
least,
not his
at least
fault.
There were 8.5 holes, not 3 holes.
Yeah, at least they were stats. is there such thing as a bad sack?
Yeah, right. I mean, people want to kill Bud Dupree for that sack in New England on Brady where, you know, it was a complete blown assignment. Well, at least Bud was there to make the tackle, you know?
Right. Give me bad sacks over no sacks all day long. But unfortunately, that's when you look back at this year, that's all we have for them. I mean, when is the last, oh, my God, did you see what he did
right.
on that?
Destroyed that guy. And Cam Hayward's done it a few times. He's destroyed some guys. We've seen, you know, the other.
Tua's made some plays.
Yeah, you know, and when I say, I said Shazier, we've seen it. Let's be very clear. We've left the defensive line out of this conversation because Dave and I both think that it's there. It's obviously there with Hayward. He's a player. Big-time player. And Tua has shown that he can do it. He hasn't done it consistently enough. And since the injury early in the season, I think he's been less effective than he was right out of the go, right out of the jump to start the season. But both those guys are – I think virtually every team in the NFL would be, you know, happy to have those guys as starting, you know, defensive linemen.
Absolutely. And McClendon, too, when he's in there.
Yeah, I'm fine with McClendon. And they're, you know, look, talk about getting pressure with four. Those guys still got to do, you know, Tua's got to do more. He's got to do more. And, you know, Cam, you don't want those guys playing 70 snaps a game. So that's a depth issue. You know, LT Walton, Cam Thomas, those aren't your guys. So if they could add, you know, this is why the Rams D-line can be so effective or why some of the D-lines in the league can be so effective that even the Bengals – is when you get to play six guys, then and guys like the Steelers are doing with their edge rushers, ironically, if you get to do that, you keep guys fresh. Unfortunately for the Steelers, edge rushers are not making any difference. But, you know, it'd be great to have Cam and Stephon Tuitt on the field for 50 out of 70 plays, and you had guys who could come in and be effective for, you know, two series a half.
Absolutely, and you know one. And Bob's going to be mad that we haven't spent a lot of time on the offense here. Look, the offense is not without its warts, but we have seen and we come to expect that the offense, for the most part, should be fine, especially next season, as long as everybody stays healthy and yada yada. There are Ben Roethlisberger is still going to throw you a clunker at times. It's going to happen. And that's why you need the defense to be there when it does happen.
Let me ask you a question to wrap. We got, you know, 5 minutes left here. Who is the Steelers MVP? Because coming into this week, I think you just kind of tossed it out there and you say it's either, you know, Ben Roethlisberger or Antonio Brown. Who is it now? Is it possible it's D'Angelo Williams?
Well, and I think Alan Cazor kind of wrote about his thoughts on that this morning. It's hard. You could make a strong argument for D'Angelo, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, look, he didn't play 4 or 5 games. Ben didn't play 4 or 5 games. AB was, you know, not visible in any game Ben didn't start, and he had 2 games that Ben did start where he wasn't. You know, you can't give it to anybody on the defense, so let's just not have that conversation. I mean, okay. I mean,
it's
not going to be Marcus Gilbert, is it?
No, it's not going to be a tackle. Would you be okay with a co-MVP of D'Angelo and Antonio Brown?
Yeah, I would have given it to Ben before this week, but I recast my vote, man. I can't give it to Ben now. That game, I cannot give it to Ben because of that game and because he missed five, not his fault. You know, D'Angelo missed five too, and Antonio Brown kind of no-showed for five. It's a tough vote. If you made me vote today, and I absolutely would not have voted D'Angelo Williams before last week, and he wouldn't have been first, second. He might not have been third, but now I'm reevaluating, and possibly he's first.
Could you have won without D'Angelo?
No. Well, depending on, you know, what your replacement level is. I mean, we'll never know what Jordan Todman was because we're never going to know. But D'Angelo Williams, I think, developed as a back because of watching Le'Veon Bell. Look, he was good in the early weeks, but he is himself admitted he learned a ton watching Bell's patience, vision, hitting holes, and that's an interesting thing for a guy who's 32 to say about a guy who's 23 or 24. He has been great, and he was great against the Ravens.
And not taking away anything away from D'Angelo Williams, but we've talked in the past about the running back position being fungible, right?
Yes.
Okay. So better chance of winning without D'Angelo or without Antonio Brown?
Well, right. I mean, if that's the thing, then you start with Ben and you go to Antonio, and D'Angelo wouldn't be in the conversation. I mean, you start with your quarterback.
I'll cast my vote for a co-MVP of D'Angelo and Antonio's done some special things this year. He really has.
Absolutely. And I'm still, and we got to wrap things up, but I am still just, and I don't know if you've seen the All-22 yet, but I'm still don't understand what the Ravens did in coverage. Look, if you roll everything to Antonio, that's fine. What happened to the other two guys? I mean, why weren't they open?
Well, they were open a few times, and I think Alex Cazor will show you in his game rewind coming up, I think, on Thursday. You know, look, you can't catch it if you're not throwing the ball either.
Absolutely.
Right?
And Ben got sacked in that play. They showed it, at least on the national broadcast, Jesse James wide open, going running a, you know, kind of a post route.
Yeah. How many targets did Martavis have, and how many did Marcus have in the game? Outside or not enough?
Yeah, right, right.
Let me pull that real quick to close things out here. Should have that memorized by now.
Browns, okay. And so the Steelers do play the Browns Wednesday or Sunday. That'll be our Browns coverage.
Marcus Wheaton five targets. Martavis Bryant three. So 8 of 34 attempts. Not even a quarter of the attempts went to those two players.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So there you go. And as you said, as far as our Browns preview for Wednesday, the Steelers play the Browns on Sunday. Boy, this didn't go the way we probably thought it would go. We hope it was enjoyable. Nonetheless, we'll talk about some upcoming Black Monday changes probably on the Friday show. We will get to breaking down the Browns a little bit more on Friday. As usual, thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Please don't use all those dirty words and name calling, especially when you're talking about David. save those for me as well. And donate, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com. Upper right hand corner, you'll see the donate button in the navigation bar. Big news, David, we're sending Alex Cazor to the Senior Bowl this year.
Fantastic.
As well, we got media passes or media stuff lined up for him. So we'll be coming to our listeners in the coming weeks for some donations to help fund that cause for us as well. And make sure you're listening to David's show on 970 ESPN as well. And give him a hard time about Chip Kelly. And I'll ask that instead of him giving me his paycheck, he makes a donation to the Humane Society in my name.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast and our last edition of Eagles Depot with Dave and Dave.